time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Why do we eat turkey and ham at Christmas? And what's behind some of the other common goodies that we love to have? Food writer Dee Laffin is with me in studio to tell us about the history of the Christmas dinner, as is TV chef and lecturer from Southeast Technological University, Edward Hayden. Folks, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Afternoon.
So why do
good
we
afternoon,
have...
Good afternoon, Andrea.
Same to yourself, Edward. Why do we have turkey and ham, Dee?
Well, I mean, it seems, you know, that a lot of our traditions when it comes to food and the Christmas dinner stem from, you know, Britain and America. So turkey was something before turkey, we would have had much simpler dinners. You know, we would have had a lot of fish. We would have had, if you think about Ireland back like years ago, you know, post-famine in particular. But when it came to like the 70s, we started adopting a lot of traditions from the States and from Britain as okay. well. And that's where turkey, we would have had geese more, or goose, I should say, geese.
Yeah.
But goose more so before we had turkey. That would have more, but it would have been more commonplace on the tables. So yeah, turkey came in from, it was kind of, What also happened around that time when turkey was introduced to Christmas, ovens were introduced. So don't forget that, like, there was a time in Ireland where we all had those kind of agas, those like big old,
oh yeah,
you know,
the early stove
yeah,
type.
Yeah, stove.
Oven.
And like Ireland was such a much more simpler place, you know, a long time ago. So there was like a hearth in the house, you know, you would cook over fire. There wasn't as much ovens, conventional ovens. So conventional ovens were introduced in like, I think mostly everyone had them by the 70s, 60s and 70s, like what we know today. Mm. And that really meant that roasting became a big part of our tradition. And that's where turkeys kind of started to really take form in the Christmas dinner.
Okay, so the turkey and ham is, it's really a tradition that we've inherited from the US and Britain from yeah. really kind of the early 1970s.
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, before that, as I said, a lot of fish, a lot of goose, things like that.
Yeah, the double meat plate though, Edward, the turkey and ham, it kind of it gives people a compromise too, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And I suppose that is the world that we're now living in, that we're looking for the whole notion of choice. I suppose also in terms of tradition, you know, whatever your persuasion is, you know, a lot of the traditions that we have, particularly around dining, would kind of stem from kind of that whole biblical connotation, mm-hmm. where that whole notion of feasting. So if we think of the different aspects of, you know, of different religions and different cultures around religion, there is that whole symbolism around feasting and the pageantry around mm-hmm. that whole feasting and the folklore around that and that sense of abundance. You know, if we yeah. go back to the loaves and fish, you know, isn't that what we have at Christmas? Haven't we all, or the vast majority of us, should I say, too much? We have that sense of abundance, and there's fridges around the country listening
oh, sure.
to you
heaving.
This morning that heaving. Are heaving at the very seams, Andrea, because we think we'll never get enough. But it is that sort of thing. And I suppose, you know, that is the message that's shining through, that, you know, food is meant to be shared. And it's meant to be savoured. And mm. if your listeners take anything from today's culinary conversation, that is the message. Share the food and savour it. And when you are going to all of the effort of shopping for it and buying it and cooking it and inviting people around, make sure that you enjoy it and they enjoy the experience, because it's an experience. Food is an experience.
But you know, it's funny, Edward, as well. Like when you think back to even more recent years, and everybody would have gone in and bought like the full Christmas turkey and you'd cook that. Like now I know in our own house at home, we tend to have the turkey crown, but it's mm-hmm. probably a symbol though, Edward, of how families have got smaller as well.
families have got smaller, and now, you know, people aren't necessarily as interested in having every incarnation or reincarnation of the turkey for the day.
The curry and the pie.
The curry and the pie and the whole lot. There's a kind of a famous parody, a funny parody about the 12 ways to eat a turkey, and people should look it up online. It's very funny. But yeah, I think people want to do that, and people want something a little bit different. And we all are kind of gorging during the day. We're having the smoked salmon, we're having the crab pate, we're having the trout caviar, we're having all these sorts of nibbly bits, and we want the cheese. So, and also I think it is the age of convenience. Do you know, when we think of our mothers, weren't they great women? The dinners they put up with, you know, lesser provisions than we now have in terms of appliances and, you know, ornate crockery and all the grandiose ways that we have. But I mean, I think people are looking for that kind of simpler thing. And you can make Christmas very, very simple from a culinary perspective, so, if you so desire.
Just on the other point, I suppose, from kind of survival nearly to celebration, Dee, we've had various different reincarnations in the era of potatoes from the original roasty.
Yeah, I mean, like potatoes, you know, obviously they're the lifeblood of our food culture. And everyone, I think it's the one thing that there could be almost wars over at Christmas. Have you ever been to a Christmas table where you have to do five different styles?
We were playing the clip from Monica and Friends and the three different versions. We're a bit like that in our
house. Yeah, like, I mean, it's not just about, like, I'm a mash girl. Like, I love my mashed potato. And I think that's where, you know, I grew up with that. I think that's why I love it. You know, 50% butter, 50% potato. That's my ratio. If you ever watch Saturday Kitchen, they're always fighting over the different ratios.
Where did we inherit the roast potato from?
Well, the roast is British. It came from British culture. Again, the oven comes into play there, because before that we would have boiled most of our vegetables and everything over fire in pots. So when the ovens came in kind of 50s, 60s, roasties became part of that and British culture. And also we got Yorkshire puddings. I mean, I don't know. We never had them, but a lot of people do. I don't know. Is that certain regional parts of Ireland maybe? Yeah.
Do you have Yorkshire pudding in Kilkenny, Edward, on Christmas Day?
Land down as far as Greignamana, I have to say, the Yorkshire pudding. And some people, I was even on Ireland AM this morning and they were talking about Yorkshire puddings and how they're a staple. But in our house, even with the roast beef, you know, they weren't a thing. You might have had them on occasion, you know, for the kind of the novelty. But you know the way sometimes the people think that they're so synonymous that you can't have one without the other. So they didn't land down as far as here. That is that very much the whole UK phenomenon that is the Yorkshire pudding.
That's where that is.
Land as far as Castlehaven and Greignamana anyway.
So we upgraded then from the roasties in the 70s, D, to mash. Where is...
Yeah, well, lots of different things. The gratin, as you pointed out, you know, started to come in as well.
Well, that's a kind of a Celtic tiger spot, isn't it?
No, definitely. And I think the one thing about Christmas dinner is it started off really simple. Like even going back, as I said, going back even further, you know, the ham was always more so the chosen meat, the goose, especially because you could boil a ham, and pigs were central to farming life. Then turkey was introduced with ovens, and that could also, obviously people do a turkey because it feeds a whole family, like you just said, in terms of numbers. Then potatoes and sides become a big part of that.
I'm all about the sides now.
And when it comes to potatoes, you've got your mash, you've got your roasties. Up in Northern Ireland, obviously, you've got champ or Kilcannon, you know, where you mix in your kale or your cabbage into your mashed potato, your spring onion. And then the Celtic tiger hit and we got fancy
potatoes. Isn't that the 18-hour potatoes during COVID, sure, when we had nothing but time in our hands?
Myself
and my sister. There were 18-hour potato dauphinoise. Isn't that how you pronounce it?
18.
We were 2 days making these potatoes. No, they were absolutely fabulous.
I love the dedication.
It was outrageous. Like.
Yeah. Like dauphinoise. You've got all sorts of, even I see people, you know, eating out in restaurants now. You see the fondant. You see like the Hasselbacks. I mean, there could be 10 different types of potatoes. Croquettes.
It. Yeah.
Croquettes are hugely popular. I just saw someone on Instagram going around asking people about what their Christmas dinner is in supermarkets. So, like, what's what do they have to have on that plate? The amount of people that said croquettes, we never had croquettes.
No, we never had them for Christmas dinner.
But it must be a big thing. I mean, it's just so funny. Potatoes are there in so many different ways.
And they've evolved clearly over the decades too. So that's
obviously
the history of the potato Christmas tradition. What about the veg? The Brussels sprouts, Edward, has been a long-standing participant, hasn't it?
It certainly has, and of course, Brussels sprouts from that whole cabbage family. Now, I think Brussels sprouts, they're kind of a bit like coriander or Marmite, you know, you either like them or you don't. I have to say I particularly like them. I particularly like them this side of Christmas, because I always think in the run-up to Christmas, they're not as strong. But no more than the potatoes, their iterations have changed over the years. What I kind of do now every year here is I divide between, some years I just parboil them and then I saute them with red onions, red chilli and salted peanuts, which I did last year. And this year I'm doing the creamed version. So I shred them down. I saute them on the pan with a little bit of stock. And then I add in some crispy smoked bacon lardons, some cream and some parmesan. And let me tell you, Andrea, you get up in the middle of the night for those Brussels
that
sprouts.
Sounds absolutely fantastic.
At the middle of the night.
The history of stuffing as well, Dee, like that has massively evolved now in recent years.
That actually goes back as far as medieval times, believe it or not. Basically, people would use stuffing, leftovers, I suppose, kind of stale bread, things like that. And also the kind of ends of meat and stuff to stretch the meat further. You know, like I guess obviously in, and even in famine times or post-famine times, you know, you needed your meat to go a lot further. You had big families that you needed to feed. So you would stretch it by adding bread to it, adding vegetables to it, and then, you know, cooking it in one of those kind of Dutch ovens, like a casserole dish in the oven, something like that. That's where it comes from. And again, just adding, you might not have had salt or something. So adding something like, you know, herbs, seasonal herbs, things like that from the land would be very common.
And now the stuffing, Edward, has had a total reboot and it's all sexied up with sausage meat and apricots and cranberries and everything else.
Apple. My sister used to put apple in hers.
Yeah. Is that a big inclusion in your Christmas dinner, Edward?
It is. And I suppose we tend to do two different types of stuffing. And that is the thing. And I find now, even I do lots of classes and demonstrations, people always say, God, that stuffing is lovely. But I prefer my own. But invariably what they mean is they actually prefer their mother's.
Yes,
and everybody goes back to that. So what we do in our house is I will do the very traditional herb stuffing, as Dee was describing there. So just your sauteed onions and butter with some herbs and some fresh white breadcrumbs and some salt and pepper. You could, if you want, to put some kind of dried fruits or something into that as well. Then I will do another version, which I will serve separately, and I will make a version of that herb stuffing. I will combine the same amount of sausage meat into that, and I'll press it into a 2-pound loaf tin, which I have lined with streaky bacon, and I might put some fresh cranberries in there as well, and a bit of diced cooking apple. And that is the thing I'd say to people, you know, your normal herb stuffing that you make, I always put a bit of diced cooking apple into that when I'm sauteing my
onions. What does it do to it?
Well, it adds a great sense of moisture to your stuffing and that flavour to your stuffing as well. But then if you combine that, I would press it into a 2-pound loaf tin with the sausage meat and bake it for about an hour and 10 minutes at 170. Yeah. You can invert that out onto a platter, Andrea, and serve it. It's almost like, for all the world, it is a terrine.
Yeah, like rather than the loose kind of,
But it's a stuffing tureen.
Oh,
and then
that.
You can have the looser. And people stuffing. Go wild for the stuffing.
Yeah.
And it ends up in the sandwiches. And
everywhere.
It has to.
Yeah. Now,
who does the stuffing have to be made?
It's the ceremony versus honesty, okay? The Christmas pudding, I will take or leave. I'd have a little bit if it was in the house. There's nobody in this day and age still eating sherry trifle, day.
Oh, I love it.
Are you serious?
What do you
love about it?
Well,
it's rubbish tinned fruit that goes into this jelly mix with sponge. It's desperate.
Nostalgia, probably. Although it wasn't necessarily first and foremost the thing that was on our table served. My sister always made the most amazing pavlova. So, I mean, I think pavlova is very Christmassy in Ireland as well. And that was, for me, Christmas. But my stepmother makes the best sherry trifle I've ever had. And yes, it is made with, you know, the gorgeous custard and cream. You can do your own version of it. The sherry, she puts a drop of whiskey in as well. That's the secret.
That's why you like it.
I think that's why I like it, true. I just love it. I love the texture of it. I love the canned fruit. I think the canned fruit for me is a real hark back to growing up as well. You know, when you just have some ice cream and
nostalgia.
A tinned fruit. I think so, but I think it tastes good. Like, what's not to love? There's sponginess, there's fruity. There's creaminess, there's custard, bit of booze. You know, on the couch later, you don't have to think about it too much. You make it earlier and it's ready.
Mince pies, are they the forgotten essential, Edward?
Mince pies, of course, also delicious. Again, I suppose everything has been sexed up. That's the thing. I mean, I suppose the only thing constant in life, Andrea, is change. And the mince pies are the same. So what I'm actually doing with my mince pies at the minute, and they're lovely, is I make the tiny little ones. I put them, this time of the year, I have them in a Kilner jar beside the kettle so that every time you go, but I'm putting a lovely little crumble topping on them. So instead of having a double pastry or a full cap, I'm putting the sweet pastry lined case filled with the beautiful mincemeat. Again, I put plenty of stewed apple in my mincemeat. I think it makes it a bit lighter and looser. And then a lovely crumble topping, which is just your butter, your flour, your sugar. And sometimes I put a bit of desiccated coconut into that to give us a little
tropical
feeling. On the kind of the cold, wet days, it kind of transports us to the tropics.
And just finally, Dee, the tins of chocolates and biscuits, is that just rituals? Ritual at this stage?
Definitely, but as important to some people as the Christmas dinner. I mean, some people go out of their way to buy the, you know, the chocolate-covered Kimberly tins, you know, or you were always given a tin of biscuits.
What was it, the USA one,
I mean,
we never have tins of biscuits in
the house. We were always given those at Christmas. We never had them any other time, and then they'd last almost a year, and if you had them unopened the following year, you're probably giving them back to the same family that gave them to you. But I think the biggest controversy at the moment is the tins of chocolates changing. They're taking out sweets that people loved growing up, they're changing the recipes, they're changing the wrappers.
Roses
people
are the
amount shrinkflation, people are just not happy with the tins of chocolates changing.
How much less they're getting.
Yeah, exactly.
Your favourite Christmas dish, Edward Hayden, finally, that you'll consume over the next few days?
Christmas dish. Well, I have to say now, I think I'll be joining the Dee fan club because I have to say the sherry trifle is the thing that I absolutely would
bring back the trifle.
Throw my clothes
I'm
off
like,
for
kill
Christmas.
The trifle.
Now, I don't put fruit cocktail in mine. Again, very controversial. I just put the jelly, sponge, loads of sherry, a lovely, nice tin custard, some freshly whipped cream, and then I become the girl from the flake ad in the bat, and I love a flake from the so that is my nostalgia. And do not try and disturb me when I'm having that.
I love it. Your favourite, Dee?
I'm a savoury gal. I know this is probably not going to be controversial, but Brussels sprouts for me. I adore Brussels sprouts when they're
fancy?
In season. Fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to do them with some pancetta and
now you're talking.
And grate some parmesan on top of them. But I have sprouts at the moment. Like, I'm having them for breakfast. I had them in a pasta dish last night. I'm having them all the time.
Sprouts and pasta?
I know. I just adore them. Char them, the blacker the better. Just love them. Yeah. I just love them on everything. So I'll probably have sprouts a few different ways over Christmas.
We'll actually have a lot of fish. It's almost a fish starter in our house. Yeah.
That's do you smoked salmon or prawn cocktail or one of those or something else?
My sister now, she's in charge of it. I'm back room.
Oh yeah,
staff.
Yeah.
You know, I do the shopping and clean
the
up and like that. You know, kind of nonsense jobs, but like keep myself busy doing stuff like that. So she'll usually do like, you know, some kind of fish starter.
Lovely.
Or maybe a bit of crab or.
I think it's nice to start with fish because Christmas, the rest of dinner is so heavy.
Yeah, but I do love turkey, you know.
I have one last question. Do you sit down and have dinner all in one go, starter, main, dessert?
No,
and
the rows we've had in our house about this over the years, right? I like to have the starter about an hour before Christmas dinner.
Me too.
Like this thing of sitting down to have a start and then this huge meal and then dessert straight after.
Yeah.
It puts me nuts.
I think eat across the whole day. Like then you can just have like
and
breaks
we have our,
in between.
What time do you have your dinner at? We have it very late.
We'd start, like I'd try and have the starter around lunch and then not have the main till like 4 or 5 o'clock and then have dessert around 7 or 8.
I'd say the earliest
something.
We've ever sat down is about 4 p.m. for a starter.
And
then main.
So you go much later.
Yeah.
Well, it depends. When I was younger, we used to do family visits and stuff. So that used to take up the day. You would have dinner a lot later. I guess it depends.
Listen, thanks a million for popping in. Dee Laughlin, Edward Hayden, for telling us a little bit about the history of Christmas dinner and why we all consume turkey and ham. Well, not all of us, but quite a few of us. Emails lunchtimelivenewstalk.com. Thanks a million as always. We'll chat to you, Dee, in the new year. And same to you as well. And same to Edward too.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.